From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the second day of February 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later, we'll be joined by Matt Bennett. Bennett Consulting channeled seeds out of Windsor, Illinois, to check the cash grain market and basis in his area. And then, as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast with Mike Tenura. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. We'll go from the top to the bottom of the South American continent, get an update on crop conditions for both soybeans and, maybe more importantly, corn. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
It is the second day of February 2017. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined now by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting in Waco, Texas. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Okay, so take me through the end of the month on Tuesday and Wednesday. A down day on Tuesday, maybe to even things up at the end of the month, and then turning around and buying yesterday, although it was a pretty good-sized up move.
Well, that's the primary reason. I think what we saw was, you got to keep in mind, Chicago lives off of commissions. And it's not uncommon for the last week of the month to kind of go opposite of the dominant trend that you had during the month. And of course, January was an up month in the grain complex. So you get into that last week or last few days of the end of the month, you'll get a lot of long profit taking. And that's, you know, turning some commissions. And then also, I think last week that kind of put the icing in the cake. I mean, if you heard trade war probably once last week, you probably heard it a million times. So everybody was panicking over the dust up that Trump and the Mexican president had. So you had even, I think, commercial rail traders that sell corn into Mexico. They were hurrying up and getting all kinds of stuff on the books before any kind of trade war would begin. So I think you had the commercial grain trade all buzzed up about it. You probably had all your risk managers all worried about a trade war and blah, 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 and they all got too short. And then we come in this week, and all of a sudden we find out that we basically have run out of sellers, and the market turned in some nice reversals to the upside yesterday. They've got the work laid down for some weekly reversals now. It's just a nice technical picture of a market that has been tracking sideways to higher basically since late summer, early fall months. And the trend continues. Today now was after your big up day yesterday. Now, as a technician that would want to be friendly to the market, you would probably would have liked to have seen some follow-through action from yesterday's strong close. But on the other hand, you ended up here with basically an unchanged day and a pretty solid day of just consolidation, taking a breather, and seeing whether or not yesterday's advance is for real or not. I guess we're going to find that out probably tomorrow. But, I mean, without any kind of major collapse in prices, we're going to close out the week higher. Overall, the monthly charts still look positive, and your weekly charts look positive, and the way I look at the daily charts. Now, the only thing that I am probably a little worried about is some of my timing studies does suggest that maybe we might be in the early time window of 60 days or so that you might want to be awful careful in here. I think what I would like to see technically is if we need to go on up and these individual futures need to make new highs for the year. If the market fails to make new highs for the year here, over the next week or two and begin to stall out, then I think then that would kind of technically lay up the groundwork then for a decline as you go on into March. But at least for now and after yesterday's action, we'll see how we finish out the week, and we'll see again what we do here early next week.
I think some probably are wondering when you said, and you hesitated a bit, that the daily charts looked okay. The soybean March contract probably doesn't look all that great. Can you explain how that looks okay to you? Because there are some, I mean, it did make a pretty healthy move yesterday.
Yeah, it did. I mean, we had a nice reversal up. I mean, we had a nice decline in beans. Corn, probably not as much so, but beans, you know, demand was weakening last week, basis levels were weakening, and blah, blah, blah. So you had a lot of people pressing the short side in soybeans. But no, I think, you know, yesterday's action implies that the corrective decline that we saw there in the last 10 days or so of January is complete. And now the market is in position now to give us a February rally, at least I think into the crop report. Now, whether or not the February crop report has anything new in it or not, I don't know, but it'll probably remind everybody the large supplies that South America is likely to produce, and it will continue to show large carryover inventories for the United States. So, I mean, it's going to be hard to see anything positive out of that February crop report. But, you know, I think the market is trading a lot of different things. I think, and I've mentioned this before, I think all of this trade war talk, number one, I don't believe it. And number two, I think that is going to incentivize some of our trading partners to maybe buy more goods from the United States and probably allow easier access to U.S. goods into their countries. I mean, the United States can't continue to give Mexico $60 billion a year and can't continue to give China $400 or $500 billion a year. I mean, when you have those kind of trade deficits, I mean, that's just giving them extra money. And I think the Trump administration is going to try to narrow those deficits one way or the other. And I think that could be very bullish agriculture, especially when it comes to food.
I was thinking about those trade deficits and what that really means. We've had those before, of course, with the Japanese. But normally what would happen would there would be investment from the other country, the foreign entity, into this nation in some form. And usually we hear about those auto dealerships or auto manufacturing facilities or purchasing real estate or other things. So haven't really watched that very closely, but it'll be interesting to see how this all all trades out. I did get a kick out of the dust up, what you called the dust up last week. I was thinking about that too, and I thought that was just kind of funny. I was thinking the president had a dust up. Since then we had a president that has dust ups, but I guess we do now.
Well, yeah, I mean, the way I look at it, just embrace the chaos. I mean, we're gonna. This is a different time in our history. And if you want to see anything normal, it's just not going to happen. And I think it's funny. I'm sure my old grain trade buddies were stewing last week. I didn't talk to them. I'm down here in the Rio Grande Valley enjoying warmer weather and sun and that. But I imagine they're all wound up, worried about this and worried about that. And I think that's all good. The markets like to climb the wall of worry. And with all this trade discussion, this is definitely going to be a wall of worry to climb.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you in about 40 minutes for Commodity Week, too. Thanks so much.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with a story from Politico. The overall cost of the 2014 Farm Bill is expected to be lower than originally projected. This largely due to declining participation in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. But there will still be a variety of proposals to cut costs during the next round of negotiations, predicts a senior strategic advisor at the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition. For example, some lawmakers are likely to reintroduce proposals that would cap the amount of premium subsidies farmers can receive from the federal crop insurance program and require a means test to determine eligibility. It's also noted that employees at the Heritage Foundation are part of President Trump's transition team at the Office of Management and Budget and have exerted much influence over his efforts to stand up his administration. Policies laid out by the conservative think tank, which advocates for completely eliminating commodity subsidy programs like ARC and PLC, and crop insurance policies that protect against revenue losses, are expected to show up in Trump's first budget, which he could send to Congress in a few weeks. Still, for perspective, farm programs account for less than 1% of all federal spending. On that note, the House Agriculture Chair, Texas Republican Michael Conaway, at a committee organization meeting this week on the upcoming Farm Bill negotiations, vowed to move quickly.
FYI, I'm going to be driven, as Colin is, to get this thing done, the 18 Farm Bill done before it expires. First time in 16 years we'll have done that. I know it's a big, tall boast and goal, but if we don't set good goals, we weren't going to get there.
That's a tall goal indeed, with Washington awash in political turmoil. Top agriculture Democrat Colin Peterson has this to add.
We've got a lot of work ahead of us in this Congress, and reauthorizing the Farm Bill is at the top of the list. I hope we can work together and get a new good bill. That can be signed into law before the current bill expires on September of 2018.
The lead senator from Iowa, Chuck Grassley, thinks the Farm Bill work is going to be tough, and given conditions in the middle part of America, he thinks that ag will hold the line against cuts to crop insurance and safety net payments. Kansas Republican Senator Ag Chair Pat Roberts, by the way, recently announced the first Farm Bill hearing for Thursday, February the 23rd. It'll take place in Manhattan, Kansas. Let's stay in Washington, D.C., but switch to trade. The chairman of Cargill says pulling out of NAFTA would have a chilling effect on the already depressed agricultural economy. New trade deals must fill the void left by the Trump administration's withdrawal from the Trans-Pacific Partnership and trying to get congressional approval of a host of bilateral deals instead of one big multilateral deal doesn't make any sense, he thinks. Cargill's chairman, who spoke to ProTrade's Doug Palmer while in Washington yesterday to testify on the Hill, says that Cargill doesn't have much that it would want to change about NAFTA and that he believes agricultural markets would react very negatively if Trump ditched the pact. I think it's in a pretty good place right now, he said. Speaking of NAFTA, Mexico isn't wasting any time when it comes to starting work on a possible renegotiation of the trade agreement, with the government in Mexico City saying talks could start as early as May, that according to a Reuters report. From the Newswire report, Mexico's government said consultations with industries would begin on February the 1st. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, University of Illinois agricultural economist has been thinking about the supply and demand for corn in the United States and elsewhere. U.S. farmers harvested more than 15 billion bushels of corn last fall. That's a very, very big crop, and it's expected there will be more than the usual amount left over from it by the time the next crop comes in. Todd Hubbs has been thinking a lot about that and how the corn crop is used. He says exports have been strong. Factually, 69% of what USDA thinks will be shipped out has either been shipped or booked already. And we're not even halfway into the marketing year.
So meeting that 2.225 billion bushels the USDA projected for exports looks feasible right now. But we do have the South American crop coming on to compete. But so far, exports look strong. I mean, I am a little concerned about some of the policy issues we see surrounding our export markets. But at this point, it's just a wait-and-see kind of scenario in my mind.
Exports are the smallest primary component of corn consumption at a projected 2.25 billion bushels. Next up is ethanol at $5,325,000,000. Those numbers suggest this sector, it's booming.
Record levels of ethanol production, over a million barrels a day for the last 2 months, basically. The ethanol industry is putting out an incredible amount of ethanol, but over the last couple of weeks, we've seen ethanol stocks start to build, which means the ethanol margins are deteriorating a little bit. So I think we could maybe see that slow down a bit. But I still think the consumption pace we see for ethanol production is going to be pretty strong in the near term.
The last and largest segment of corn consumption to explore is feed usage. USDA in January estimated 5.6 billion bushels would be fed to livestock. It's a really hard number to calculate, says the U of I's Todd Hubbs.
You never know how much corn's being consumed, and as we move through the marketing year, livestock production numbers are up almost across the board. The hog herd's up, broiler placements and egg settings are up 1 to 2% a week. So when we look at the livestock sector, there's a lot of livestock production going on. Having said that, and the initial number the USDA projected back in the start of the marketing year, they've already reduced that 50 million bushels.
Some of that is because of competition to use the corn in the ethanol industry, and some because of substitution. There's more available sorghum, for instance, to feed, and it can be cheaper than corn. In the near term, Illinois' Todd Hubbs says the consumption pattern should keep the price of corn in Chicago mostly in its current trading range, somewhere between $3.40 and $3.70 per bushel. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. This is the closing market report for the second day of February. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. It's a Thursday afternoon. We're joined by Mike Tenorat. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. Let's start in South America, the most northern regions. They've had some troubles. It was dry early on. Have we changed things there?
It's been raining quite a bit in the northern corn and soybean areas of Brazil since about the middle of January. The reason that we do have some concerns over what's taking place there is that it's continuing to rain this week, and we think that the wettest week of all will start up next week. There's a number of indicators that suggest to us that we'll see a strong cool front blast far to the north for this time of the year. That's a good formula to produce heavy rainfall in these northern corn and soybean areas. Now, at this time, we're in the middle of harvest season, or at least harvest season is beginning, especially in the state of Mato Grosso. This area has not been harvesting soybeans very quickly, and it's been because of all of the rain over the last 2 to 3 weeks. So if we continue to see significant rainfall over the next 2 weeks, then you have to start questioning how many of these soybeans will be harvested in a timely manner, and how much corn will be planted in a timely manner as well. Because remember, as soon as those soybeans are harvested, that second crop corn is planted right behind it.
And move a little further to the south. What kind of conditions do we have, in the lower parts of Brazil and into Paraguay?
We would argue that those areas have been a little bit too dry over the last 2 to 5 weeks. If you look at some of the rainfall numbers that have been observed in northeast Paraguay and into western Paraná and southeast Mato Grosso do Sul, which, mind you, is a key corn and soybean area, some of these areas have received less than half of their normal rainfall over the last 4 to 5 weeks. And you can even go back a little bit further than that, with some of these areas having received less than 2 inches of rain over the last 4 to 5 weeks. That's pretty dry for that area. And we think that even though there are some thunderstorm chances out there through Sunday or Monday, these chances do need to verify, because after that goes on by, that system, there's not a whole lot right behind it. So again, we think an argument can be made that some of those areas need a little bit of rain, and whether or not it comes up here is a bit debatable, but we certainly will see at least a couple of thunderstorms across that region over the next 4 to 5 days.
And finally, over the past several weeks, Argentina has headlined our thoughts about the growing regions in South America. Should that continue to be the case?
Well, that's a tricky forecast, because what we've had in Argentina over the last 6 weeks is some of these key farming areas in the middle of the country have been extremely wet. But that all ended about the middle of January. So since then, we haven't seen a whole lot of rain, despite a couple of strong thunderstorms earlier this week. We do have a strong system that moves through the country over the next 3 days, and that will produce pockets of heavy rain. Some of that rain will occur in that wet area that doesn't need it, but keep in mind, southern Argentina, in far southern Buenos Aires, including anywhere from 5 to 20% of soybean production, that area was in a drought because while everybody to the north was getting a whole lot of rain, they weren't seeing much of anything. Now, they did see some good totals in that southern area earlier this week, and they will see some more going forward. But again, a tricky situation in Argentina. How does all of that add up in the end? That's one of the big questions that's unresolved at this day.
Thank you so much, Mike. We appreciate you taking the time.
You're welcome, Todd. You have a great day.
You too. That is Mike Tenura. He's with T-Storm Weather out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.